And I'd like to thank everyone that's helped us open
Thanks.
our meeting by reading again. Thank you. And take this opportunity to welcome those that are joining us since we first started. A warm welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to anyone that might be new to NA with us this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker tonight who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And a journey to into and through Narcotics Anonymous. And I believe Ian is going to introduce them. So Ian, over to you.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. My name's Ian and I'm an addict.
Hi, Ian.
Hi,
welcome.
Ian.
Thank you.
Hi, Ian.
Thank you, everyone, in service of this very special meeting. And I feel blessed to be able to bring my friend and crazy buddy in recovery, David, and I'm really, really looking forward to this share. So, David, I'm so grateful to have you as a friend, and you've been so helpful for me over the last year, helping me get back to England. And I'm looking forward to hearing you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. David, just unmute yourself, my friend. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks,
And
Ian. Hi, David.
hi, everybody. And thank you, Ian. Actually, you made me really emotional, Ian. What you just said, bless you, mate. Yes, you are a friend. And God, yeah, I feel a bit overwhelmed by that. But my name's David. I'm an addict. And
Hi,
thank you, Elaine.
David.
For,
Hi,
um,
David.
hello, hello,
Welcome.
everyone. Thank you, Elaine, for inviting me. So I've done two for you, Elaine, this week. You're one of the most dynamic share finders I've ever come across, which is brilliant. I must admit, I was very daunted by the share because the one that I did on Wednesday is 10 minutes, and in this day and age, 10-minute shares online seem to be the norm. So 40 to 45 minutes, I was thinking, Jesus, why did I agree to do that? I can't think of anything to say. And I spoke to my sponsor. And my sponsor's 37 years clean. He's amazing, and he does all sorts of stuff. And he said, "What in God's name are you going to talk about? You can't talk about yourself for 45 minutes." And I said, "Well, no, I'm not going to talk literally about myself in 45 minutes. I'm going to talk about this program, which is what I'll endeavour to do. So please forgive me if I'm a bit cloudy or all over the place. I've got long COVID. I've had it for 3 years." And along with other health conditions, it really, I've not had a good day today. It's been one of those days when I've gone had to go back to bed a couple of times. So I'm not up to snuff, so to speak, but I'll do my best. So yeah, I'm David, I'm an addict, and I am definitely an addict. And I first knew I had an addiction problem. I didn't know it was an addiction problem. I thought it was a specific drug problem. When I was 19, I did use when I was younger, but it didn't kind of manifest in what we know as addiction. That came around when I was about 19. I took a year off before going to university, left home, moved in with my girlfriend, and and I changed dramatically. And what I was doing at that period in my late teens, early 20s, as I thought I was having a good time. It was part of the punk times, punk movement. I was part of that. It was all very exciting, and it was all a lot of discovery. But what I was doing was, as I now realize when I look back on it and have looked back on it, was surviving, and I was using to live, Is that in the reading? We live to use to live. I don't think I ever lived to use, but I certainly used to live. And for a considerable period of time, I did that. And I just literally couldn't stop. And I just thought, well, this is what I have to do, and on the outside, I had quite a what might look like a successful life. I got my degree. I took my degree in a medical center at university because I tripped over the carpet and fallen into an ashtray and it had cut my nose in half. So I looked a right mess doing my exams because I had a party after the first exam and I had a load more to do. And that was quite symbolic, really, of how I was. I don't know how now, got to do postgraduate degree at the London School of Economics, where I went, came back to London. I just found things, obviously my addiction was progressing, not at the rate that it later did, but it was progressing all the time. I actually got married. I bought somewhere to live in a nice part of London. I had okay jobs. My wife, who's still a really close friend today, my first wife, obviously she's an ex-wife. And I used to get up in the morning. I used to think, how can she get up in the morning? She's not one of us. Have a cup of coffee and a piece of toast and go to work. How can she do that? I had to get up in the morning and I had to go to work and I had to drink a bucket of methadone to be able to get to work. And I had quite a responsible job. So what I did was I didn't like addicts. I didn't like street drugs, so I managed to drugs through. And it says it. I don't know. I think it's in our book. It is in our book, not the other, the mother book. It says that, there's the old lady hitting doctors, all these people, robbing people on the street. I didn't have to rob anybody on the street or steal. But basically, I used bent doctors and bent pharmacists to feed my addiction. Which as it progressed, it just got more and more difficult to live like this, and I just found it impossible to function. And this took me up until literally like up until 96, and I did a detox in 96, and whilst I was in there, I was thinking, these poor alcoholics, man, it's summer. I did it in the summer in August. I thought, I can come out of here and I can drink. They can't. They can't come out and drink. But so I left this detox. There was no 12-step program in this detox. So I came out and it felt like the handbrake had been released on my life, and I was in gear and the turbo charged into total insanity and madness, which started with alcohol, and very quickly I was so insane I went back to my drugs of choice to try and feel normal. And that period luckily didn't last long, and my wife at the time managed to get me into a 12-step treatment center, which is where I discovered this, which is where I discovered the solution, because I didn't know the solution, and it was horrendous being detoxed, coming out and thinking, what do I do? It's a long day. How do I sleep? How do I do this? How do I do that? I didn't know how to live. And yet I thought, I'm intelligent. I've done all right in life. I've had therapy whilst using, but I had some, some good indicators of my sort of personality type and stuff like that, but I could not live day to day. I was admitting I was powerless and that I was unmanageable whilst being in the pattern of active addiction, and that was a really an easy admission for me. I didn't have a problem with that. I could see that everything was going to hell pretty quickly. So there in the treatment center, I was there for a little while, and they had H and I, which is NA coming into treatment centres, and we were allowed out once a week or taken out once a week to a meeting. And I saw the fellowship at work. I saw the steps at work in people, and I'd never seen. I didn't know anybody. I mean, I didn't know any using addicts, so I didn't know what happened to anybody. And suddenly I was there with people that had used like me and differently, but had come to the same sort of position in life, and we were getting clean. And then we were having this H and I meeting coming in and going out to meetings. We've seen people that had seemed to have a grip on life and were doing something about it, and that was our program, which now I think it's probably one of the greatest spiritual events of the 20th and 21st century. I mean, you know, the originators from AA, they should be made saints because they have produced that little group in Akron, Ohio, have produced more miracles than visions of, you know, Our Lady Mary. It's quite incredible how this works. So yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. I kind of was detoxed. It wasn't pleasant, but this time I wasn't sort of then just dropped out in the world with nothing to hold on to. I had something to hold on to, and so I started going to meetings and stuff like that, and looking for a sponsor. You know, my journey, I have relapsed, and I think I was probably clean for about 6 months, and I relapsed. And at the time, I thought, well, what am I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I relapsed really badly and horrifically. So, you know, I've got experience of relapse. It was really, really nasty. And luckily, my local authority managed to get me back into the same rehab, and at this time I'd really hit the rock bottom. I thought the rock bottom had come before because I heard about rock bottoms, but this was the absolute rock bottom for me. I kind of gone back out there, hit the madness, you know, 110%. I already had Hep C, which I got in the early 80s. I then ended up getting HIV, and the woman I got it from, not my wife, like my using partner that I was hanging around with, she killed herself. It was like everything that hell on earth can be was happening. So I got back in, and I really did that. You know, that was me giving up. I could feel that I had nowhere to turn. You know, I really, really had to kind of knuckle down. So I was back to the beginning. You know, all right, I've already admitted it, and I know I'm unmanageable. So if I stay there, I'm probably going to use again. If I don't start doing other things, I'm going to use again if I don't really take this seriously. So I did, and I got a sponsor, and I started doing the things that they suggest, like service. And I must admit, you know, I didn't find this easy. I wasn't a mad member. I didn't particularly like meetings. I didn't particularly trust people. But I thought, I've just got to do this. So I did it, and I think that's where my sanity started to come in. You know, that's where a bit of sanity came in, is that I actually literally removed myself from London, moved to somewhere else, start again really from scratch, give up my job, my marriage. I mean, it's not my wife's fault that this went tits up, it was totally mine. But, you know, I gave everything up, and I started again, and I really immersed myself in this as like the structure of my life. And lo and behold, you know, I'm not sure how sane I was, but I was certainly a lot better than I had been. And I was very determined to keep this going. Now, I don't have a problem with the word God or the concept of God or higher power, whatever. I'm glad that it's worded in the way it is so that it can include everyone. I think that's really important. I always had a belief in God. I didn't go to church. My parents weren't religious or anything like that, but I kind of had this belief, which I didn't really understand, but I didn't have a problem with it. So I kind of thought, yeah, there is this for me. You know, some people use the group, some people use the fellowship, 12 steps. That all is applicable for me. But I had this vague idea that there was some kind of entity that was loving, you know, as they say, it says in the book, bigger than me, and wanted the best for me, was out there. So, you know, and I was getting better. So then you know, this is making the decision to turn your life over. I mean, I don't know how the hell I turn anything over. I suppose I do, but whenever I look at that third step, I think, I don't even know what my will is half the time, you know, and how can I turn my life over to something? You know, it all sounds so theoretical and vague, and it's more to do with my brain than the program. But I realized, and working with other people, that I was doing that, in that I was, you know, I was going to meetings, I was working with a sponsor, I was doing the service. So I was turning things over. Sometimes, you know, my will was, I don't really want to go to a meeting tonight. You know, I don't really want to do this. I don't want to do that. In fact, I don't want to do anything. And I was trusting. And I think this is the important thing, was that I was trusting. And that for me, the essence of all this stuff is obviously relationships that we have, you know. I started to form relationships with people in recovery, friendships and stuff like that, and I could see other people doing this stuff, and I wanted to emulate that, which I tried to do. And so I suppose that's where I was turning over. Although every time anybody asked me that, when I was working through the steps with my sponsor at the time, I didn't do the guidebook thing. I did it the old-fashioned way, which I really like. I kept thinking, I don't know what it means. What does it mean? You know, anyway, I was told, well, you're actually doing it, so don't even worry about that. And then it's like this whole thing. And I hear so many people say, oh, step four. Oh, I'm scared to do my step four. Oh, you know, stuff. I just thought, oh, get this bloody done, mate. You know, I want to get through this as soon as possible. And so I went for it, really. I went for it, and the way I did it was kind of like there was the you know it was done in the columns, which is the old way of doing it. And from that, I could, you know, I did my list, who it was, what it did, how it affected me, what it was in me. So it's pulling out future steps already in this step four, so I could see why I was doing it. And obviously, you know, all of us have a lot of shit that we carry along with ourselves, and it was painful. You know, there's some really painful things in there. You know, embarrassing things I'm ashamed of, stuff like that, just behaviors and things. So, but I thought, well, you know, I'm going to show it to someone, and then I'm going to burn it. I'm certainly not keeping it long. So I did that, and it didn't take as long as I thought, because I wasn't working. So this, you know, this was my life at the time. I could spend as much time as I wanted doing this, and I wanted to get through it. So I did, and I did the, you know, I admitted it to, well, obviously to myself. It was written down to God, because I could kind of see. You know, my belief was, well, if this is coming out of me and it's on a piece of paper, if you believe in some kind of higher power, maybe it's out in the essence now, and to my sponsor. And I was really surprised at how, you know, how much in common we had, even though I didn't think we did. Now, this is when the story starts getting a bit corrupted. This is when this perfect little recovery starts to go tits up. I went away. I left the country for about a year and a half. I went to India. I stayed clean all the time there. I went with my second wife, who was in recovery, and we had a great time, and we went to conventions and meetings and stuff like that. I came back to the UK, and I got ill. I got AIDS. You know, my immune system went to a certain level, and I got really ill with it. And I mean, thankfully, this is in the early 2000s, as I'm talking to you now. It didn't progress, because I would be brown bread in about 2003. They gave me the drug therapy, triple combination therapy, as it was then. And it was a struggle. I wasn't frightened, but I don't know why I wasn't frightened, but I wasn't. I just thought, no, something's going to turn up, like Mr. Micawber. So I was taking this, and just prior to that, I'd been doing some acting, which I'd never done before, but I was doing in recovery, and I got ill, did this, and I couldn't do that anymore. And so I started writing, and I started writing plays for the theatre, and I started doing quite well at it. And that became my focus, which is fine if that was the focus. And I remember people saying to me, if you put something in front of your recovery, you'll lose whatever it is you've put in front of the recovery, and you'll lose this. And I was thinking, yeah, I know better than this. I know better than this. And life to me seemed, oh, this is a bit of a dream. I'm doing all right. I'm doing this and doing that, and I'm doing well at it. And so I stopped doing. I still went to meetings, but like once a week, and just almost to tick a box. Yeah, I've done a meeting this week. I didn't do any work with a sponsor. I didn't do any steps. I was just paying lip service, really. So, inevitable consequences is I relapsed, and lo and behold, everything, lost. I lost everything. I had a production company. I had all these lovely things that I never dreamed, beyond your wildest dream. Well, they were beyond my wildest dreams at that time. And so I relapsed. It was awful, as relapse always is. And then I had to come back again, even more beaten than the last beaten time I was at a rock bottom. It's kind of, I think the only limit to a rock bottom is death, frankly. It's like, how much do you want, So I came back, and I've been back for a while now. And life changed again, and I knew this was the solution, because when I'd done this before, I knew it was a solution. But I thought, this time, don't end at five. Whatever you do, bloody do the whole thing. So, I did that. I found a new sponsor, and I started going through the steps all again. And it just felt different. It felt a lot harder. There was no pink clouds. There was no nothing in this one. It was just like hard work. It really was hard work. I always call it the ISIL toilet paper form of recovery. If anybody is born in the 60s or 70s and went to, school, they used to use this really terrible toilet paper called from ISIL, which is awful. So my recovery before that was the four ply really nice toilet paper, and this was the hard graft nasty toilet paper of recovery. That was my analogy. But it was recovery, and I kind of had to fight pretty hard for it, and I knew that I needed to walk through this stuff. So I started doing it in the same way, the columns and the things like that. And then I got to past step five quite quickly, and I was looking at, this being ready to turn my defects, which had come up in my step four in the defects column. They'd come up to turn my, to make a list of them, and get ready to God of my understanding to remove them. And I thought, well, I don't have a clue how this is going to happen. I'm now very mindful about the defects in my life, but I don't have a clue how they're going to go. But they're there, and I think, oh well, I'll try not to act on them. Well, that's impossible, because it's my default setting. And it says entirely ready, not just we're ready or a bit ready, entirely ready. I was never entirely ready to have all my defects removed. I'm still not entirely ready to have all my defects removed right today. But I did it. I gave it my best shot, and it was. I suppose it's that humility, which for me comes into the step seven bit. Is like, we humbly ask God to remove them. My belief was, is God going to remove this? I doubt it. But it was a process. It was a journey, and there's kind of spiritual elements of that, which, we hear it in the reading, that this is a spiritual program, not a religious one. And it's, we've got the how: honesty, open-minded, and willingness. And obviously humility is a big, big thing, and I'd been humbled and humiliated. I'd humiliated myself. So it was like, get humble, David, and just try this, and try and move through this. And so I did. And I don't know what changed, and it's a, thank God it's a daily program. That's one of the things I love more than anything about this wonderful program, is it's just for today. Thank God it's just for today. If it was just for 10 years, I would be horrified if it was just for 10 years. But because what would happen after 10 years for a start? But just for today, I can cope with the day, and sometimes I have to cope with the day broken up into small groups. Life, if you get clean, life isn't always easy. And I came into recovery with some illnesses that didn't make life that easy, and baggage, as I think most people do. But I did what I thought and what my sponsor was kind of suggesting, and he was giving his experience, and I was doing what I was meant to do. And then there was the list of all people with harms, and within that list, there was some really poignant stuff. It was mainly my mum and dad, my parents. And I felt so much shame and guilt around those. And then it was partners that I'd had, wives, ex-wives, blah 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 blah. It was all There was a load of that stuff there, but I put it on this list. And I knew just going around going, sorry, sorry, it's going to do bugger all for anybody. And some people don't want to know. My parents, they didn't want me to make amends whatsoever. They weren't interested in amends. Basically, they just wanted me to be clean and well and enjoying life. So there was no point in going to them and starting saying, like, oh, I'm going to start doing a step nine soon and it means I need to say this. My parents didn't want to know that. And so I didn't do that with them. It came out in a different way, but I was able to make the biggest amends to my parents, actually, of any amends that I made. But I did the ones on the list. And I remember at the time my sponsor said, well, like, sometimes life just brings these things up, don't because it also says in that, don't unless it would injure them or others and stuff. And sometimes if people say, look, I don't really want to hear an amend, it means like they don't want to hear it, how much I want to tell them, and that's the end of it. And I suppose the most significant one for me has to be my mother died back in 2014, and my father died in 2018, right at the beginning of 2018. And he was ill for a little while, and he asked to go home to where he lived in the countryside in Wiltshire, which meant he was asking me to look after him. Now, my dad wouldn't trust me to change a light bulb in my life, but he was asking me to actually look after him and take him out of this world, which I did. I gratefully did. Obviously this makes me emotional. It was really powerful, but I did, and I got my dad home. I looked after him. It was very briefly because he died very quickly, and he died with me by his side, and I know he was grateful for that, and he was comfortable, and he was safe, and it was kind of. There's a book by Albert Camus, A Happy Death. I don't think there is such a thing, but it was certainly a tolerable death for him. So, that was my amend, was actually being responsible, being in charge of a lot of drugs that in the past I would have thought, oh, this is excellent. I can use half of these, he can have the other half. So doing those responsible things, that was kind of the transformative bit. I also remember there was lots of alcohol in my parents' house. And I kept looking at it. I poured it down the sink in the end, but it was just, it did cross my mind that after my dad died and there were unused up drugs, it was like, well, you feel shit. You're an orphan now, you've got no parents, So the addiction was still there in the background, waiting to get the door opened, but I didn't do that. Which kind of, I you can see I'm going through the steps to do this 40-minute share as best I can, which kind of brings us to 10, which 10 is lovely because, I When I look back at the steps, we kind of do them every day, a lot of them. But I thought, God, I don't want to do endless versions of this. You know, I mean, some people do, and it really works for them. But I thought, you know, on a daily basis, there's ways of making this program work on a daily basis, and that's what I did. And my sponsor, we decided to do a step a month, not work through them formally, but every week we speak on the phone for an hour, and basically what we do for the whole month is we talk about whatever step it is that month. So we're now in November, we're just finishing, you know, step 11. Last month it was step 10, and we both go back and try and look at it in different ways. And we've even just recently, in this October, we got sheets, you know, with different things that you tick, the pros and the cons of the day, you know, the assets and the defects and blah blah blah. And we kind of both of us did it, and it was really interesting what that brought out, you know, different things about how I am, how he is, and stuff we could relate to. And I loved that. It kind of reignited the step 10, because what I was doing is I was going to bed and sort of doing a prayer, and then it was like, quickly before I went to bed, he's like, how's my day been then? Have I been all right to everyone today? Yeah, not bad. Have I done any good today? I'm not really sure. You know, it was a very like brush off type one, but this one we were doing wasn't. And both of us kind of got very back into to working this stuff. And we did it daily, and I still do. I'm not doing the ticky list bit at the moment, but I'm trying to get more stuff in. And then it was, then it, you know, I'm up to step 11 now, and that's a weird one for me. Certain steps seem to pop up in my life, and 11 popped up. What are we, 2024, 2023? Step 11 seemed to become really big in my life, and I don't know why. But it really did. It was like, you know, prayer and meditation. Was I doing that? Well, not really, not either, you know, kind of lip service again. And I don't know, it felt almost like an invitation. Well, why don't you have a go at doing this in a different way? And I took that invitation from my higher power, if you like, and went for it. And it's been transformative experience. It hasn't stopped me smoking. Excuse me, I'm smoking as I'm talking to you. Although it did for a while. So yeah, I got into that, and still am. I love that step. What I love about this program is not only is it practical, but I love this, the fact that if you do apply it, there is a transformation that takes place, and that it does, you know, it is beyond my wildest dreams. I thought being a writer was beyond my. I always wanted to be a writer, so I couldn't write shit when I was using, apart from academic stuff. I had no creative ability, and I did get that in recovery, but that wasn't the beyond my wildest dreams thing. The beyond my wildest dreams thing was is more recent, and it's more to do with this. It's, you know, how, where I am in the world, or in my existence, sort of thing. I know that sounds vague, but it, you know, it is that. It's not anything I do. I don't do a great deal now, and because of my health, you know, I do as much as I can, and I enjoy my life. But in my life has become, from the outside, if I looked at it from 20 years ago, I go, Christ, that's a bit miserable, David. It's actually not. So that's been a good one, which then obviously. I try to do it every day. I love the fact it's there. I love this idea of, you know, a higher power and a will, and having the power to carry that out, and you know, where that sits with me in life and how I behave. Really simple things like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, my background's academic, and it's to do with politics and things like that. And today, that can send me completely insanely angry watching the news and doing stuff like that. And all I get is rage and revenge and really nasty negative things inside myself. And this is kind of like, well, you need to change that because these aren't good emotions. And I've done that. I've done that. I have to limit the amount of media I watch. I don't do social media at all. So, whatever media I'm watching on the TV, if it's news and things and current affairs, I have to limit it because that's my default is to go into that kind of thing. And it doesn't help anyone. It just puts more fuel on a fire that I can never put out. So there's that. And then there's good old step 12, which is what we're going to do next week, my sponsor and I, for a month. Which is, I mean, no, it says having had a spiritual awakening. I think, well, have I had a spiritual awakening? The cynical part of me says, well, doubt it, mate. You're probably still the same as you were before, just a few things have changed. But yes, I have. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, not as a result of me on my own, not as a result of my own efforts or anything like that, but a result of working through this stuff and not just working it, writing it down and forgetting it and go, oh, not time for the next one, but actually embracing it or trying to embrace it a day at a time. The 12 one is like me doing this. This is step 12, it's having a sponsee. That's kind of 12 is doing service. That's it, keeping this going. And that doesn't come natural, I think at heart I like, my default, I keep saying default setting because it is really my default setting is sit on your own and read, philosophy books and theology books and don't bother talking to anyone or to anything else, because they'll just annoy you. This stuff kind of breaks me out of that and I get, the real David, the David that is, does do good stuff. And as I'm even saying that to you, that part in my head's going, that's crap. It's like still there, that voice. It's like, yeah, right, mate. That's total rubbish. But it isn't. It isn't. But it hasn't silenced that little inner critic that loves to shout every time I say something good about myself. And there are many things good about myself. In recovery, I've become a parent. A step parent, and that's been magical, magical for me. Having that, I never envisaged that. I was never interested in that at all. And also, the way I am with my partner, my friends, the fellowship, all that sort of stuff, it kind of comes from this. But sometimes when I reflect back, I think, well, yeah, you was always all right. You weren't nasty, you weren't violent, you weren't this, you weren't that. Well, no, I wasn't. But AI wasn't happy. And nobody that loved me was very happy either because, it wasn't a happy environment. All I was trying to do was get into this defended, secure zone where I felt I could exist, which got smaller and smaller and smaller till literally it was just my own head at the end of the day. I was just like a head. The whole world was a frightening and scary place. And I don't have that, I don't have that today. So yeah, as I think I said earlier, I've got a litany of health things which do make life a struggle. And one of the ways I try and get around to that sometimes, because sometimes you just think, look, I've now got four things going on. Do I really have to deal with four things? One thing I can deal with, two even, but more than that, it's taking the piss. And how I get around that is, well, I look after myself. The best way I can, and that's emotionally, spiritually, and physically, obviously. And I do gratitude lists, and sometimes I'm grateful that I'm in a warm house. I have a relationship, I have a stepdaughter that loves me, that I love, my partner loves me, I've got good friends. And I can go and have a nap as long as I want in the daytime because I don't feel well enough to be up. And I can go to bed in a warm bed. Sometimes it's as simple as that, which is certainly wasn't beyond my wildest dreams before I came into the program. And some days that is beyond my wildest dreams. So it sounds depressing, but it really isn't because not every day is like that, obviously. And I do loads of other stuff. It's just sometimes it takes a bit more effort than it did. But yeah, I mean, that's it. I've dried up completely now, so I can't think of another thing. Well, I could, but it would probably just be me trotting on a load of crap. So with that, thank you everybody for listening. I hope I've made sense. I think I have. I've actually got the book, the basic text in front of me with how it works, so that I've got the steps in the right order. Because I was thinking, which is seven, which is six, which is, I always get six and seven messed up when I try and do it in my head mentally. But so I had the book for reference, cheating, but there you go. A good bit of cheating. So with that, thank you everyone for listening.